from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the state of Kentucky, where a man named Nelson Campbell was determined to convince the Kentucky state legislature to adopt a program that would help low-income people access vegan meals. You might recall on this program, when we've discussed plant-based living, there's often a refrain that low-income families can't do it. And Nelson Campbell thought he could make a dent with that. But what happened next is probably instructive for all of us who are interested in policymaking. That is part of the story of a new film that Campbell directed called Plant Pure Nation. It's showing at the Rochester Academy of Medicine this coming Sunday. There will be panel discussions. Here's what you need to know. 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. at the Rochester Academy of Medicine, you can see Plant Pure Nation. There's going to be food provided by local vegan restaurants with panel discussions after the shows, and we even have rumors that Nelson Campbell's dad might be there. We're going to find out in just a second. Let me bring in the director who's on the phone with us. Nelson, thank you for taking the time to join the program today. How are you?
Hi, Evan. Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
And also in studio is Dr. Ted Barnett from the Rochester Area Vegan Society. Nice to see you back here, Dr. Barnett.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And a couple of pod people are with us as well, Phyllis Fleischman and Michael Hagelberg. Phyllis and Michael are members of RAVS, the Rochester Area Vegan Society. And Phyllis and Michael, you want to tell us real briefly sort of your role here? I know that part of Plant Pure Nation is seeking to bring sort of community leadership around the country. What will you be doing?
Well, we're here really basically to support the film and the showing of the film. And the idea of the Plant Pure Nation is to encourage local people to establish similar programs, providing food for people, vegan food for people, to help address some of the problems we have with obesity, diabetes, and other types of heart disease and other problems.
Okay. And Phyllis, how's that going?
I think it's going pretty well. I mean, this is just the beginning of a lot of outreach that is to come. So I'm excited to be a member of the pod and to be right on that edge of what you'll see coming with some new programs we've got.
Well, I want to start this conversation with Nelson Campbell, and I want to just briefly read one of the reviews of Plant Pure Nation, this film, that was written by a vegan. And the review starts like this. If you've seen one vegan propaganda film, you've seen them all. Or at least that's what I thought during the first 15 minutes or so of Plant Pure Nation, a documentary on the benefits of a plant-based diet. But then things changed. And the review says, this is a film that really is aimed not just at vegans, but at all of us, for all people to think about the choices we make, the possible impacts. There's a lot of different threads in here. Nelson Campbell, why did you want to make this film?
Well, you know, I've known a lot about the history of this idea for years because of my father, Dr. T. Colin Campbell, who's kind of recognized as the science father of this movement. And there have been a lot of politics over the years that have, you know, politics and economics that have helped to suppress this message, which, you know, is probably one of the most important messages of our modern time. And I saw this firsthand when I went to Kentucky and got involved in a legislative effort there after my father had spoken on the floor of the House of Representatives. And we tell this story at the beginning of the film. My father was invited to speak there along with Dr. Esselstyn, and he had a very enthusiastic reception and picked up the phone and called me afterwards and said, you know, I can't believe the enthusiasm here for this idea of plant-based nutrition. So I got involved and started talking to the person who had recruited my father, Tom Reiner. And Tom and I immediately hit it off and started talking about a project there in Kentucky. At the time, I had been considering an intervention program in North Carolina, but after talking to Tom, I realized, hey, we might be able to do this in Kentucky and make a bigger splash. And the idea was to do a two-week intervention in a poor community in eastern Kentucky, put people on a plant-based diet, and do pre- and post-biometric testing to measure the results. And we offered to do this with our own funding. So there really was nothing lost on the side of the state. But basically, we just asked the state, look, we'll do this with our own money, but we want you to watch what we do. And if we're successful, then we'd like to be able to sit down with you and talk about a larger strategy, initially focusing on the low-income communities in Kentucky. So this was something that, you know, I figured, you know, even with all my cynicism, knowing what I knew of, you know, the history of this, I thought, well, you know, we might be able to get this done. But when it went into committee behind closed doors, it led to the most intense lobby effort that Tom Reiner said he'd ever seen in 30 years of politics. And it was really kind of disgusting to see how, you know, certain forces worked so hard to suppress something like this. So it was at that point that I decided, you know what, other people need to understand this. Other people need to understand why it is that we haven't heard this message before. And so that's when I decided to make a film, and I had a storyline in my head that I thought I could drive to make this point clear.
All right, well, Nelson, let me just jump in and say I think we have a clip from the film, Plant Pure Nation, that reflects some of the feeling, the emotion, the sentiment that happened at sort of the conclusion of that legislative effort in Kentucky. So you're going to hear Nelson Campbell's voice among several others in this clip. Let's listen.
The bill seemed to enjoy strong initial support, but once it went behind closed doors, the reality of politics set in, and it was ugly.
It was some of the most intense lobbying against a measure of this sort that I've ever seen.
I thought that would be one that would everyone would be for. You know, this is a good idea. Who could be against it, right? Well, you got to realize that there's a lot of interest, big money interest, that... they don't want any changes because of the bottom line, which is a dollar.
They would not hear it on the House floor unless I agreed to amendments. So it took something that had the strength of steel, and we, after we got through with it, it had the strength of Reynolds Wrap.
You know, we had put a lot into this, and so I was deeply disappointed when we failed. And I got wind that it was the agricultural lobby who had undermined our bill, and you know, got me to thinking, who were they representing?
That's a clip from Plant Pure Nation. So the big money interest that you're talking about, the ag lobby, can you be a little bit more specific about that, Nelson, who they are?
Well, you know, these are the, and we don't know, of course, exactly who they were,
right.
but we know Tom had a good idea of who they were, and they're basically groups representing the corporate agribusiness sector in Kentucky. You know, the big livestock industries, for example, they were a major part of this. And they aren't the only ones who fought this over the years, but in this particular case in Kentucky, it was that group.
I want to remind our listeners sort of the connection among current guests, past guests. I'm talking to Nelson Campbell, who's the writer and director of the new film Plant Pure Nation that you can see in Rochester this coming Sunday at 1 and 4 p.m. at the Rochester Academy of Medicine. Now, Nelson is the brother of Tom Campbell, who was recently on this program, Tom and his wife, and they were talking about the University of Rochester Medical Center's embrace of a plant-based diet and lifestyle as an actual sort of medical approach and treatment, not just, hey, we think it's a good idea, but saying there is evidence that this can positively impact and even perhaps prevent or even alleviate medical problems. So Tom and his wife were on the program. That's Nelson's brother. And Tom's father, Tom and Nelson's father is T. Colin Campbell, the author of the China Study. And again, if you're looking for evidence about a plant-based diet and living, this was the first really revolutionary breakthrough that looked at a long form, a big bulk of evidence. And Ted Barnett's here from the Rochester Area Vegan Society. How impactful has their work as a family been?
Oh, tremendously impactful. I can't begin to express how many times we talked to people who became plant-based because of the China Study, which is the book that was co-authored by Tom Campbell and by his father, Colin Campbell. Amazingly influential. It talks about the evidence in China, how the more animal products you consume, the more various diseases rear their ugly heads, heart disease, various cancers. But he also addresses the political issues and how difficult it is, as Nelson experienced, how difficult it is to get changes through Congress or through the basically the dietary guidelines, which is produced put out every 5 years by the USDA and Health and Human Services. I mean, until the year 2000, that committee was composed of members who were from industry. And then only after one of the organizations that I belong to, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, excellent organization, they sued the federal government, and industry sent about 15 lawyers to the court, and PCRM sent one lawyer. And the lawyer looked at the law and said, well, the law is you can't have people on this committee who are from industry. They have to be impartial. So now I'm proud to say that the committee now, since 2005, is really made up of academics. And I've testified before the committee a couple of years ago. We think that their recommendations, while not perfect, are moving in the right direction now.
Okay, and I want our listeners to know, if you want to call the program with questions either about the film Plant Pure Nation, about plant-based living and eating, etc., please do so. We'd love to hear from you. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. A little bit later this hour, we're going to talk about some of the evidence, even in a 10-day or 20-day trials and bumps, and we'll get back into the film in just a second. But this is an example of the kind of questions that I'm sure Ted and many others, Nelson and Phyllis and Michael hear often. And this comes from a listener named James, and said, Evan, nothing against plant-based living, but look at your teeth. Evolution means that we should be eating meat. That's just perfect evidence right in your own mouth. That's from James. Ted Barnett, what do you make of that?
So that's interesting. So the caller is making the argument that humans were designed to eat meat. And you know, we have teeth. It's true, we do have a canine tooth, like a dog, but ours is pitifully small compared to a cat or a dog, honestly. We also produce amylase in our saliva, which is for digesting starch. So, I mean, there are lots of arguments about why humans really are better off eating meat, or some people argue that we were designed to eat meat. I honestly don't think the arguments really matter very much. I think what matters is the argument that we have now, which is that humans are really, in their current state, not doing well on their current diet of lots and lots of animal products and lots of processed foods. And we know from interventions, even short interventions like Nelson did with his jumpstart, the 10-day jumpstart, people who switch to a plant-based diet within 10 days, they're seeing incredible improvements in their fasting blood sugars and their triglycerides and their blood cholesterol. So you can make the arguments back and forth. I don't think, that humans are likely to, like, chase after a deer and tackle him and, you know, bite into his neck and, you know, bring him down like a mountain lion would. But, you know, if the listener thinks he can do that with his teeth.
It can't be the first time you've heard that argument.
No, and it certainly has. And it's not, I don't think it's a particularly valid argument, honestly.
Okay. Well, and again, what we try to focus on in this program are what we do know on what the evidence tells us. And the evidence is growing. It's compelling. You know, for someone like me who has grown up as a omnivore, it is a dilemma, to borrow a phrase. And Nelson Campbell, I want to get back to the film now, because we're going to branch out from where you go after Kentucky. So you're feeling that frustration. You decide this is a story that people need to hear. And tell me what else the film attempts to do and the stories that you tell.
Well, first of all, I should say that this was the first film I had ever made. And when I decided to make this, I went out and recruited some people who were really experienced with this sort of thing. So the director and writer of Forks Over Knives joined me, as did the producer. And I want to give a lot of credit to them, because they taught me a lot. I feel like I went to film school for 2 years and could not have made the film without them. That's John Corey and Lee Falkerson, and we had also a fantastic editor and a photographer. But anyways, at that point in the film, I basically say, you know what, they killed the bill, but they didn't kill the idea, and I'm going to take that idea back home to North Carolina and do it there. And so came back to North Carolina and decided to do an intervention, a 10-day intervention, in a small rural town here in North Carolina, and had such good results with that that I decided to do another one. and another one. Eventually, we ended up doing 5 of these interventions, each one getting bigger than the one before, and we just had fantastic results.
How did you put them together? How did it work?
Well, it's a 10-day program, and we call it a jump start. And we do pre and post biometric testing. It's basically just a basic cholesterol panel. And then we provide some front-end education, and then we provided 10 days of prepared meals and a little bit of health coaching along the way. So I set up shop next to the freezer or to the cooler where people would come in to pick up their meals so that I could talk to people each day. And that was basically it, just, you know, giving people plant-based foods and doing the testing to quantify the results.
And I think it's important to point out here that whenever we talk about changes in the way we eat, the question is what's sustainable. That's why on this program in the past we've talked about juice cleanses, which to me have always seemed silly. You're going to, for 3 days, you're going to do nothing but have juice or juice and smoothies, and of course you might see a change in 3 days, but what is sustainable? This appears to be, Nelson, the change to people, to the way they eat, that might certainly be sustainable, yes?
I think it is sustainable, but I also, I'm also a realist, and we were very busy making the film and working 80-hour weeks and didn't have the time to put the infrastructure in place after these jump starts to continue providing the support. And so basically we introduced people to the idea, but then it was up to them as to whether or not, they stuck with it. And it's in a place like Mebane, there's not a lot of support. There aren't a lot of food options. There aren't a lot of restaurant options. There's not a lot of community around this idea. So, quite a few people did stick with it, but I also know that probably an equal number fell off the wagon. And it really underscored for me why it's so important for us to really make a serious effort here. It's not enough just to write a book or even produce a film. We have to create the infrastructure at the local level that educates people, inspires people, and helps to build community around this idea and provides wellness programming and food options. And that's why we decided to develop this pod strategy that you were referring to at the beginning of the program. Because if we're going to transform this society around the idea of plant-based nutrition, that's the kind of intensive effort it's going to take.
All right, this is where I want all of our guests to help me understand what happens next now. And I've got all kinds of ignorant questions, but you've got a goal to take this idea and to start this jumpstart program, I guess, as far and wide as you can do it. And if you're going to reach certain people, you're going to have some sort of financial help in some places, aren't you? I mean, that's part of the struggle that Nelson Campbell had in Kentucky is you thought you were making some progress, your father thought you were making progress, and you got shut down. You feel like you got shut down by powerful interests, et cetera. Who's going to pay and help with these programs, especially for families, the kinds of families that you were initially thinking about helping in Kentucky? Who's going to help with that? And I'd ask that to Nelson and Ted and Michael and Phyllis, what happens next year? Where are we going with this? Let me start with Ted.
Well, I think Nelson raises a really important issue, which is that this is going to require a societal change. People are social animals, and we tend to eat what people around us are eating, and we tend to behave the way people around us are behaving. So just going at it a few people at a time, while it's beneficial for them, they go back into the culture, and they tend to relapse. The culture itself hasn't really changed very much, although I will say that the fact that we're having this discussion is just a major change from what you would expect a few years ago. So Nelson is absolutely right. The important thing is that we need to have a social change. It's coming, I think, from all directions all of a sudden. And a lot of it you can trace back to the China study, the book that Nelson's father wrote. But there's many, many specific things. The Rochester Vegan Society has its programs. There's other people who are trying to work with insurers to get plant-based nutrition reimbursed, education for that. But it's going to come from the ground up. You're not going to see this coming from politicians because, just to give an example, New York State is now very proud of the fact that we're producing all this Greek yogurt, which is very good for the economy, I'm told. But you can't imagine any politicians, especially someone like Charles Schumer, our senator, he's not going to say, gee, I think I get this plant-based notion. It sounds really good to me. I think I'm going to come out against dairy. Well, he can't do that. It's just not going to happen. So it's going to come from the grassroots. It's going to come from movements like Plant Pure Nation and from the grassroots. So as far as specifically who's going to pay for it, I don't actually have a good answer to that. I can say that people are buying food on their own now, and we're just recommending that they buy a different kind of food. I'm not sure that being plant-based is any more expensive than eating the way people are eating now.
So. But if people want to do a jumpstart program, here's a perfect example. Here's a listener named Jill listening right now. She said, I love the Campbells. I hosted a pre-screen of Forks Over Knives when I was working for Whole Foods. And I'm wondering, if this is this plan only for adults, or how can kids get involved with the social aspect of supporting plant-based nutrition, and what about schools? Mm-hmm. That comes from Jill, and I'll start with Nelson Campbell on that. What do you think, Nelson?
Well, I think that, first of all, the best thing to do to get kids involved is actually get them involved in the shopping and the cooking process. You know, obviously, we have to educate our kids, but if you can let them get their hands dirty and participate in that process, they're a lot more likely to follow through and get excited about it. The issue of the public schools and, I guess, private schools, that's a big question, particularly on the public side, because so much of that is top-down. It's driven by the government. And, of course, we know what that's all about. So it's not easy to change that. But again, this is why we have to really increase public awareness around this idea. If the public begins to understand this health message, then that, the public demanding change is what will cause change within the school. I also should point out that this, in this POD strategy that we're launching, we're going to be launching hundreds of groups across the country here in the next few months. And each of these groups will be focused on promoting this message within their local communities and helping people who've decided to live this way to stay the course. And what we're also going to do is we're going to encourage these groups to engage in activist activity. And one of the things that we'd love for people to do is to go into their local school system and say, hey, we've got to make some changes here. Here's the evidence. Mm-hmm. And, get people behind us in demanding these changes. And as we see efforts succeed, as we see things that are innovative, we're going to come in and document these things on video, short videos, and share those videos across the network so that we can create this kind of massive cycle of social invention and social learning. And I think, efforts that are focused on young people are really, really important.
Well, especially if the social aspect comes into play, and then the question of, so Jill is writing the program asking about her child. Mm-hmm. Let's say her child gets involved with cooking at home and gets really into more of a plant-based diet, or I say more of. Let me just also back up and say, Ted Barnett has been really, really patient with me in the past on this program, because I've said things that I thought were, like, really helpful, and Ted has he has this eye tick that happens when I say I say things like I'm not vegan, but I'm becoming more vegan, I keep thinking Ted's gonna say great, and Ted looks at me, he's got this smile, and he's just trying to hold it together, and there's a reason for that. So there are some listeners who think it sounds extremist, that hey, I'm not entirely plant-based, but I'm eating less animal products or fewer, et cetera, et cetera. And Tom Campbell, Nelson, your brother on this program, I think a couple of months ago, I asked him about moderation. One of my old colleagues at Channel 13 used to say, well, I've interviewed doctors over the years, and the lesson I get is everything in moderation, even moderation. And we all sort of, and Tom said, actually, there is a real risk even in moderation. And he said that people don't like to hear that. Mm-hmm. But that is what the evidence is starting to show us. So is that, Ted, why you get that eye tick when I start saying that?
Yeah, so I didn't know I had an eye tick, but thanks for pointing that out. Sometimes I feel like I'm a member of the clergy, and people sort of, when they sit down next to me with some animal meal, and they kind of forgive me. I'm sinning, I know. But, there is an expression that Caldwell Esselstyn uses, which he's the surgeon out of the Cleveland Clinic who's done a lot of work on the cardiac aspects of plant-based nutrition. He says moderation kills, And the problem is it's always, well, moderate compared to what, right? I mean, we've got this base, the people's diets now have become so far from, you know, what we're adapted to eating that just like cutting that in half is not going to do it. And, you know, cutting it in half, that's moderation, right? I mean, people need to learn how to cook. They need to learn how to eat right, and they need to learn how to exercise and get outside. And, you know, I'm not going to back down from that. I think the closer you get to 100% plant-based, the better off you are. And we've raised three vegan children, 23, 26, and 28. And the 23-year-old's been vegan since before birth. And so I don't yeah, I think moderation is a troubling term.
Okay,
but I say that with a smile on my face.
I you're going to be shocked to hear this, but the phone just started to ring. So, listeners, we'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on this. Maybe you have gone plant-based. Maybe you want to go plant-based. Maybe you're concerned about the attack on moderation. But look, it's coming from, I think, and that's why we're having these discussions, and that's why I'm trying to open my mind as someone who still eats animal products. It's coming from an evidence-based perspective, and we're doing our best to consume as much evidence as we can. So after this short break, we're going to come back. We're going to talk to Phyllis and Michael about how it's impacted their own lives, how the pods work. We've had some questions coming in online. How do I get involved? Things like that. So we'll do that. And I want to remind you again, the film is Plant Pure Nation. It's coming to the Rochester Academy of Medicine this Sunday. That's the 27th. A 1 p.m. screening and a 4 p.m. screening. There's going to be vegan food from our local vegan restaurants there. That's right, Dr. Barnett?
Absolutely, yeah. That's correct, yes.
Okay, so yeah. Food, film, and right. Then panel discussions after both of them. I know you'll be involved.
Yeah,
there's
Tom
a
Campbell.
Rumor. There's a rumor that not just Tom Campbell, but maybe even Colin will be there. I don't know, Nelson, if your dad will be there, but there's we can officially confirm that it's a rumor.
Exactly. Tom is pretty certain.
Nelson, your dad, any chance we're going to see Colin there?
You know, I just put a call into him, asked that same question. So I don't know for sure. He's going to be traveling this week, so I don't know if he's going to be able to make it or not. But when I talk to him, I'll lean on him a little bit and see if I can get him up there.
If anybody has an in with him, I would think it's you. So short break. That's how you can see the film and participate in these discussions. We're going to come back to more of your questions and talk a little bit more broadly now about plant-based living. And so let's come back and entertain those questions that you have on Connections next. Coming up in our second hour, we'll talk to Lily Ledbetter. You probably know her for the Equal Pay Act that her own case inspired. We'll also talk to Catherine Switzer, the first woman to run the Boston Marathon as a registered competitor back in 1967. And why? Because they're both inductees of the National Women's Hall of Fame. We'll talk about the 2015 class as well. It's all next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. From the Rochester Area Vegan Society, Dr. Ted Barnett's back in studio, and Phyllis Fleischman and Michael Hagelberg are here as well. And on the phone with us is Nelson Campbell, the writer and director of Plant Pure Nation. That's coming to the Rochester Academy of Medicine this coming Sunday. It's got our first phone call. It's at 844-295-TALK, and Andrew in Rochester is first. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hi, once again, great show. I'm Colin. I've called in the past. I've been a vegan for quite a long time, 14 years, and I do believe it's the best thing I've ever done in my life. But I wanted to bring up two things. You had dairy farmers on last week, and I thought they got away with murder with you announcing that they're always taking good care of their
That's
cows.
Not, no, okay. That's not what we said, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, one of them is you got doctors on the show today. One of the last things one of the dairy farmers said before the show was over is milk makes strong bones. And I, these doctors can tell you what they think, but we know now milk does not create strong bones. It's actually the exact opposite. And the last thing I'll say is this, is a cruelty involved just with dairy. That's why I became a vegan, is the cruelty. And we subsidize that industry heavily with our tax money. And for them, the one lady on that show, sidestepped this issue over and over. A couple people called in or texted in. What happens with these baby cows? How come you take them away from their mama cow immediately? These cows never drink their mama's milk. We humans do. and they're sent off to slaughter. And every time you guys talk about slaughter or killing animals, I noticed, and you can go back and listen to your shows, you always giggle and laugh, and it's actually not a very funny thing. But saying that, just the milk creating strong bones, just see what the doctors have to say. And thanks for your show, Evan.
Andrew, thank you for the phone call. A couple of points there before I kick it over to the doctors. Number one, the notion that whether milk is a good source of calcium or not, the notion that there's no calcium to be found elsewhere, or the implication that if you want calcium, you need to get it from dairy, is bunk. And we've known that for a long time. There is calcium, there is protein, there's all kinds of great things in a lot of plant-based products. And I'm sure our guests are going to fill us in on that in a second. Andrew is absolutely right about that. I do not giggle about slaughter and never would. In fact, on this program, we have had some of our most responded to discussions. How do you like the grammar of that session, that sentence? Some of the most response we've gotten has come from questions on ethical treatment of pigs. Did an entire discussion on that. Gestation crates, etc. Trying to shine a light on legislation in various states, the way they're treated, to give people the information. We've talked about chickens. We talked about Nick Kristof's piece in the New York Times, abusing the chickens we eat. And we talked about people who raise chickens locally. I talked to a farmer at Lakestone Family Farms, Dennis LaPelle. He's a fabulous guy. And he talked about the way he feels in his bones on the day that they have to slaughter. And it is a life and death matter to them, and they know it, and we absolutely will continue to talk about that. That's part of the process. If we're going to continue to consume animals, we have to confront that. We can't just not know how they're treated. And I do think that at some point, whether we go entirely vegan as a lifestyle on this planet or in this country or not, we will look back at the way we treated a lot of animals, and we're going to be very embarrassed and ashamed. And I don't think there's any question about that. So, Andrew, I do appreciate the call. On the question of milk now. Mm-hmm. Ted Barnett, your doctor, you're with the Rochester Area Vegan Society. He's saying calcium isn't even, milk's not even good for calcium. What do you say to that?
Andrew's actually absolutely correct. So if you look at the countries around the world that consume the most dairy, they have the highest rates of osteoporosis. And conversely, the countries that have the lowest dairy intake have the lowest rates of osteoporosis. So obviously adding more dairy is not going to help the problem. There's excellent sources of calcium, as Evan mentioned, in all kinds of plants. Green leafies are wonderful for that. And truthfully, it's not really much of an issue, honestly, calcium. Osteoporosis is an issue. I don't question that at all. But the cure for it is not drinking dairy. It may not even be consuming more calcium, which can have can be harmful, actually. It's getting lots of green leafies with vitamin K, magnesium, all the good things that you find in vegetables. So most of us, without any trouble on a vegan diet, can get the calcium we need, which is probably only about 600 milligrams, even though we recommend about 1,200 milligrams. The government recommends. And then just one more point. The Federal Trade Commission says that the dairy industry cannot advertise that milk is good for your bones. They have to word it differently. So you can look that up. But they're not. The Federal Trade Commission is aware of that, and they won't let the dairy industry advertise that way.
Let me ask the Ravs in studio with us, the Rochester Area Vegan Society members, Michael and Phyllis. How long have you been vegan, Michael?
I've been vegan for about 4 years. Over 4 years.
All right, so the switch. Were you a milk in your coffee kind of a guy before then?
I was vegetarian for a while.
Okay.
And I was vegetarian because I was upset about the idea of slaughter, of killing animals.
Sure.
I then got some information about the fact that their lives were probably more horrific than their deaths. The way animals, and you mentioned chickens and pigs and beef cattle, chickens are probably the most abused animals in our society, both the egg-laying chickens and the chickens that are used for their flesh. They live in horrendous conditions for a very short period of time.
They do.
And are then sent to slaughter. It was originally for me the idea of slaughter and of their abuse during their life that made me interested in a plant-based diet. That changed when I learned some of the other aspects of a plant-based diet, the health benefits, also the environmental benefits. It's really not sustainable to feed as many people as we have on this earth when cattle are using up so much of our natural resources, our water, our land. So for long term, you used the word earlier, is it sustainable? It is not sustainable to have a meat-based diet. It is definitely sustainable, and we're going to be able to feed many more people with a plant-based diet than a meat-based diet.
Okay. Phyllis, how long have you been vegan?
I've been vegan for 3.5 years.
Any difficult changes that you experienced early on?
Well, I didn't go vegan 100% right away. I had seen the movie Forks Over Knives mm-hmm. about 4 years ago, and so it took me about 6 months to actually make the decision to go vegan. I was a milk in your coffee, actually half and half, steaks. You know, everybody that I know is surprised that I did this. I have two brothers that have been vegetarians for a very long time, and I used to be with everybody else teasing them, and, you know, it was just weird to be vegetarian. But I saw Forks Over Knives, then I got more education, as Michael said, about the conditions of animals and the environment, and so the health aspect and the others is really what solidified it for me. Also, my dad had a stroke 4 years ago, and now he's asking me, you know, could this have been prevented if I had a different diet? And I really think it could have been, and I think that it's like smoking was 50 years ago, where everybody smoked, even doctors advertised smoking. And so now the information is not going to get out to people because doctors aren't educated. So what we need to do is educate the public, teach people how to cook. That's what I want to do, is teach people how to cook really delicious meals and provide delicious meals to people. So I'm really excited about it, and I think that this is the front end of it. It's going to happen.
I am going to go back to the phones in a second, because they are lit up now as we talk about vegan, about plant-based, and we're talking to the writer and director of Plant Pure Nation, which is a film that is screening in Rochester on Sunday. This coming Sunday, the 27th, at the Rochester Academy of Medicine, there's a 1 and a 4 p.m. screening. There's going to be vegan food out there from the local vegan restaurants, and a panel discussion will follow both of the films if you want to go out and check them out. Before I get back to the phones, I have two very interesting comments that have come in, written comments. One listener says, people say vegan is extreme. Well, so is open-heart surgery. We've heard that before. It's true. That's a good comment. Jake, though, writes, your caller Andrew is part of the problem. There's a big difference between being pro-plant-based and anti-meat. No one likes being preached to, and it backfires. So he felt that stridency can be off-putting, and that's difficult. But look, Andrew's called this program before. He's very passionate about it. Let me ask Nelson Campbell, the director of the film. What approach works here? And it's sort of strange to have the conversation, you know, but let's talk about that. What approach do you find is most successful in reaching people who maybe like Phyllis, who all of her friends are surprised she's vegan, but something broke through for her, but something is different than all of us. What tends to work in your mind, Nelson?
Well, first I should say I do, you know, like all the passionate people out there, and sometimes passion can come across as someone being strident, but I have found that what works best is a humble, non-judgmental approach. People definitely don't want to be lectured to, and when we did our program here in this small town in North Carolina, you know, we had to be very cognizant of how we approached people, and the thing that I found that works best of all is humility, non-judgmentalism, and explaining to people how this idea resonates with, you know, some of the mainstream values that most of us hold dear. You know, the idea of personal responsibility, taking care of the next generation, you know, even love of country. You know, this is a huge problem for our economy and the solvency of our government. And then you have all of the environmental issues, the idea of environmental stewardship. There's so much about this idea that really resonates with those mainstream values. And so you have to, you know, you have to be able to talk about it in those terms. And I think when you see the film, you'll see that we made an effort to do this. In fact, that's one of the most common comments that we've had, is that we took a very humble, you know, non-judgmental kind of an approach and did a lot of things that would help connect the idea with those mainstream values.
Okay, I'm going to get to the phones because Chris in Rochester wants to talk about animal cruelty. And just to elaborate on a point Andrew was making as well, when we talked to dairy farmers last week, we did not say that all cows are treated wonderfully now. We talked about some of the things that are happening, especially on smaller operations, that would allow cows to be more comfortable throughout their lives. And we even talked about Temple Grandin, who was in Rochester last week. She is someone who has helped innovate, at least try to create more comfortable settings for animals before slaughter, and she has been working in that industry for years. So let me go grab a phone call, and this is Chris in Rochester. Next up, go ahead, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. When I was younger, I had some friends who told me how wonderful a vegetarian diet was. And I agree that vegetarian, plant-based diet is a good thing. I will never dispute that. But they, as they were saying this and then telling me that there was so much animal cruelty in the meat and protein producing business, which you really can't dispute, but they would say to me the reason they were vegetarians was because they thought that the animal cruelty was just terrible. All at the same time, they were wearing leather shoes, a leather belt, and carrying a leather purse, or perhaps wearing a leather coat. So I don't understand how you can keep those two things in your brain at the same time without kind of going, I mean, I get the food value. It is a wonderful thing. I personally grew up eating a lot of vegetables and didn't even know I was eating vegetarian food until I got older. But, I mean, because vegetarian doesn't have to be yucky. It can be absolutely delicious. Ask all the Italians and the French and the Middle Eastern people. But the idea of telling someone that you are going to be vegetarian and or vegan because you think animal cruelty is a terrible thing, and then wearing leather boots, shoes, belt, purse, coat, I find that, I guess, is disingenuous the right word? I'm not quite sure. I'd like to hear what they have to say about that.
Chris, thanks for the phone call. Nelson Campbell, first up, what do you think?
Well, first, just to make a general comment about the whole animal cruelty issue, I do agree with the arguments against factory farming, and it is an issue that's near and dear to me. But I think we have to be careful when we're out promoting this idea and we're trying to change the world around it to lead with that argument. Because when we do that, we immediately trigger the guilt complex in a lot of people. I mean, most people feel that they love animals. You know, we have a lot of pets in this country and dogs and cats and different things. And no one wants to feel like they support that kind of abuse of animals. So when you lead with that argument, you trigger this guilt complex. It causes people to shut down. And I found that the best way to lead, again, is to lead with the health argument and the environmental argument, and show how this resonates with mainstream values and how people can become empowered through this idea. In terms of the specific issue that the caller brought up, I think obviously it's always important that we be consistent in our beliefs. And so if you do say that you believe in one thing, then you need to, you know, follow through on that belief with everything. But, that's pretty straightforward.
We've had some callers who want to talk fish eating. I'm going to try to squeeze that in, but before we lose any more time, I just want to make sure that we hit the question on what's coming out of this film, Plant Pure Nation, and what happens next. And among that, among those questions are, you might have heard earlier this hour, that there is a question about the pods and what the pods are. So let's circle back to that if we could. Ted Barnett, real briefly, just reintroduce the concept of what the pods are going to be.
So the local pods are people who have volunteered to assist with Plant Pure Nation. So in the short term, we have arranged to have this movie shown at the Rochester Academy of Medicine, and we've put a lot of effort into that, obviously. And members of the pod will be there taking tickets and handing out food samples and giving out literature. And then, of course, we'll be answering questions afterwards.
Can you become a pod person locally?
Yes, you can.
How do you become a pod person?
Well, you can volunteer either by going to plantpurenation.com or you can go to rochesterveg.org.
Rochesterveg.org.
Yeah.
Okay.
Either of those, and certainly, if you're not in the Rochester area, you'd want to go to plantpurenation.com because they're nationwide, and we're just local. So.
And my understanding is, you know, pods across the country will do, in many ways, they can set their own programs, cooking classes, events, right. support groups, and these the Jumpstart program that you heard described that you'll see more about in the film Plant Pure Nation. Pods are also working on that, my understanding as well.
Right. We haven't worked out the mechanism for that.
Okay. Phyllis, what do you want people to know about the work that's going to be going on then? You know, give me a sense for what you'll be involved with.
Well, I feel that it's a grassroots effort, and I mean the Jumpstart is just a small, tiny, tiny piece of it. Like you mm-hmm. said, sustainability, it's really about changing your mindset and saying, you know, I think I could do this actually, maybe 3 days a week, and just get there gradually, like I did actually. I mean, what I would like to see is people just change their mindset and say, this food is delicious, I actually know how to cook, and I want to be part of that, teaching people how to do it and how fun it can be, and the results that you get out of it are tremendous.
For all of our audience who have at least heard of juice cleanses or tried them, more people will have tried a juice cleanse than will have tried a Jumpstart. But a Jumpstart is, you know, think of it that way. If you're going to introduce yourself to that and give it a shot and then try to build something sustainable, this is a chance to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, so we'll probably see more of that. And we also will see more of what Dr. Barnett's been working on, which are these six-week courses as well, right, Dr. Barnett?
Right. So
we've talked about that in the program in the past. You're still doing that.
Yep, that's going to be Rochester General Hospital starting October 13th, six Tuesdays in a row, and it's a six-session course that I teach. It's accredited through the University of Rochester, so physicians can get CMEs for it. They can get 12 CMEs, so we encourage physicians to sign up for that. You can go to rochesterveg.org to sign up. And we look forward to seeing people there. It's been taken by over 325 people already, and this is the eighth time we've given it.
Has it been growing?
And it's been growing. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not only informative, it's generally entertaining also.
Thank you.
Well, Ted is always entertaining. I can say that from my interactions with Ted. Let me squeeze in another phone call, and this is Samantha in Rochester. Go ahead.
Hi there. I had a question on eating fish and all the benefits that have been purported for fish oil, proteins, things like that. And so just your views on why one shouldn't eat fish.
So I'll respond to that. well, there's a lot of reasons. For one thing, if you just take a step back and take a global view, there's 7 billion people on the planet, and not everybody can eat salmon from Alaska, which is probably the least, considered the most healthy of all the fish that are out there. But there actually really is a lot of evidence that that fish doesn't really help, and that fish oil doesn't help. If you look at the recent medical literature, fish oil and omega-3 fatty acids are probably have been misunderstood, and that there's really no good evidence that omega-3 fatty acids really help. Having said that, we advocate that you have a natural plant-based source, which is 2 tablespoons of ground flaxseed every day with your cereal or however you want to take it. We don't necessarily advocate any supplements for of omega-3s, and we definitely don't advocate eating fish. For one thing, most of the fish in the ocean is contaminated with mercury and PCBs, and even the official recommendations to eat fish say, don't eat more than 2 servings a week, and if you're pregnant or a small child, don't eat it at all. So there are issues with that.
It's the moderation thing.
Yeah.
Maybe even moderation's an issue. Go ahead, Phyllis.
Dr. Michael Greger has an excellent website called nutritionfacts.org, and in it, he has his year-end summary where he talks for about an hour about all the latest research. And he does a little bit about fish in this year's summary and the linkage between ALS and Parkinson's disease and these clusters. So the caller might want to check that out at nutritionfacts.org.
I opened the hour by mentioning the review that I read of Plant Pure Nation, which is the film that's coming on Sunday to the Rochester Academy of Medicine at 1 and 4 p.m. And I'll close with a bit from that review as well, that this is not just a film for vegans and evangelists. It's a film for omnivores living on a standard American diet of French fries, cheeseburgers, and 4 a.m. beef burritos from Taco Bell, and the people who just might change their mind. And that is what Nelson Campbell has set out to do with the film. We got about 20 seconds, Nelson. What do you want to leave our audience with as we get ready to see the film on Sunday?
Well, first of all, the film, as you said, it is could connect to people. It's not just all people. It's not just for a particular group of people. And it's a great story. It's a story-driven film. But also, I just want to leave with this thought. What we're trying to do here is actually very well demonstrated by the conversation we've had. It's people like Phyllis, Michael, and Ted who are going to make this change happen. People who have other jobs and busy lives to step outside of that to volunteer their time in their local community to help get this message out. And that's what we're trying to do with the film and these pods, is to create a movement where folks like this can connect around this idea and change the world. And my hat's off to the three of them. I don't know if I'm getting older or what, but I almost get emotional when I see people out there, you know, doing the kinds of things that they're doing.
Well, I got to jump in here and say thank you, Nelson. It's a message well received. That's Nelson Campbell, the director. Ted, Phyllis, Michael, thanks. See you Sunday at the Rochester Academy of Medicine. Short break.